Welcome to the PSDcast with your host, Jason Lumberg with Power Systems Design. Now, the U.S. Senate just passed a bill that, according to Reuters, would speed permitting and create new incentives for advanced nuclear reactor technologies. While anti-nuclear groups have long fought against expanding nuclear power, the bill passed with bipartisan support and would both cut regulatory costs to licensing advanced nuclear reactor technologies and reward the successful deployment of next-gen reactors. And on the line to discuss this is James Walker from our old friends at Nano Nuclear Energy. So, James, thanks for joining us. And beyond what I mentioned in the intro, why has it been so difficult to expand nuclear power in the U.S.?
Hi there, Jason, and thanks for having me on your show. So there's many, many answers to this question. But I would say, historically, just on a public perception level, the difference between the reality of nuclear and the perception of nuclear has always been more vast than pretty much any technology there is out there. And I think that can probably swing politics in many ways to try and pursue other alternatives. And you can see that in countries like Germany, where they shut down their nuclear because of a very powerful green lobby, and they tried to pursue other alternatives like wind and solar. And the result of that actually ended up being increased carbon footprint, because they had to buy power from Poland, which was generated by coal, and the price went up for them as well. So that's an example where nuclear can be working very well. There's no incidents at all. But because of a public perception about nuclear, it can affect the politics of it. And I think that's been a predominant reason, because during the 50s and 60s, when the world was very keen on nuclear and America was launching nuclear reactors every other week, there was good public support. And over the years, that has been damaged a lot. And I think a lot of it has been damaged by that misconception. So if I was to say to you, nuclear is the safest form of energy, if you look at something like deaths per gigawatt hour, that's an incredibly valuable metric, because it means that nuclear is actually the safest, even if you include things like wind and solar into those equations. And it's that kind of disparity between reality and misconception which has affected public perception enough to move the politics.
Definitely. Now, for groups like the Union of Concerned Scientists, what's their preferred path forward for next-gen energy?
Well, the Union of Concerned Scientists, I mean, that's a really great group. And I think predominantly their mission as well is to utilize science to improve and develop solutions, essentially to improve our future. And so when they're focusing on nuclear energy, they're looking for how it could be improved. And so if you have an incident like Fukushima, now obviously Fukushima is a very weird example, because that was a plant that was hit by both an earthquake and a tidal wave consecutively. But still, from the Union of Concerned Scientists, that's a risk that wasn't accounted for. So essentially, it's using an innovative and practical solution, a practical analysis of an energy type to improve it so it can be done more safely. But they're not anti-nuclear at all. They predominantly want to focus on ways to make things better.
Okay, now, we've mentioned this before, but it really never stops being true, and we're still seeing the effects, I think. But do you think the war in Ukraine has started a chain reaction where, you know, a big part of the world was suddenly cut off from oil and natural gas, coal experienced a resurgence, and now apparently nuclear energy too? So why not, do you think that's the case?
So it's happened on a couple fronts, actually. So, for example, countries in Europe that were very dependent on Russian gas, what the war in Ukraine really emphasized was that if you don't generate your own sovereign energy and you're dependent on another country, then your own foreign policy is completely limited, because you can't really try and persecute us or institute policies against the country upon which you're dependent on, especially for energy, because if your energy turns off, your country stops running. And so some countries in Europe, the Germanys of the world who end up on natural gas, or the UK who end up on natural gas, can't take a hard line with countries like Russia. So the importance of having sovereign energy has become very transparent. And that trickled over to, well, what does is that possible? Well, not everywhere is well suited to wind and solar. Those are very locationally dependent things, and not everyone has access to hydro or geothermal. Again, very situationally dependent things. So, are you if you're not mining your own coal, and you're not mining your own gas, and you don't have access to these sort of things, the nuclear power can be put anywhere. And so that's why a lot of focus has returned to going back to nuclear energy, because it does give you that sovereign energy generation. And the other important part about the war was that the US, up until the war, was sourcing a lot of its nuclear material that it would need for its own domestic programs from Russia. As part of an agreement, it was sourcing weapons-grade material, and it was downblending it to meet its domestic needs. And that reliance, or at least that ability to source that material, meant it didn't have to develop its own domestic industry and infrastructure so much. So when the war happened, suddenly the US realized that it needed to build back that infrastructure and rebuild it and invest more heavily into it, because it can't be dependent on that supply chain anymore. So that it's precipitated on the move towards back to nuclear energy and the rebuilding of infrastructure for that reason too. So it's happened on multiple fronts for different reasons.
Okay, now let's talk specifics of the new bill that was just passed. What exactly does the bill do, and how does it allow for the expansion of nuclear power? And additionally, what's NANO Nuclear Energy's stake in this?
So the ADVANCE Act has come about because when you are objectively looking to try and produce more nuclear power, and you're looking at things like, say, the cost of nuclear energy. So the joke of in the nuclear energy business is that nuclear energy is cheap, but the paperwork is expensive. And what that means is that, say, you have a very good product and you've made your prototype, then to get it through a licensing process can be a multi-year. You could be looking at hundreds of millions of dollars and taking it through that licensing process, and that adds on to your upfront capital costs. Now, if those upfront capital costs all come at once, then the financing costs around those capital costs are also huge, and you end up with a situation where 70% of the costs of a nuclear power plant are financing. And that's come about in part because of very long licensing periods, which are subject nuclear to a level of scrutiny that nothing else is. So the ADVANCE Act is put out there to try and streamline a lot of that process that has been built up over the decades, because China is now building, as an example, more has in the pipeline more nuclear power stations than the rest of the world combined, and they can do that because they've built up their infrastructure and they're putting these reactors out fast, and they're not subject to these legacy licensing processes, which might not be very applicable to the smaller reactors that are currently being built. So the ADVANCE Act is trying to streamline that to reduce the capital costs, get products out sooner, and then actually make nuclear energy much cheaper. And that's a top-down from a federal level, passed on to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the NRC. To try and institute that streamlining process. So, as far as nuclear energy is concerned in this, I mean, we benefit hugely. When we go through the licensing period, our timelines account for a very long licensing period and the requirement to have a lot of money to be able to actually qualify for it, because most companies will not even be able to take a reactor through that process because it's so expensive. And this is a cost completely outside of construction and design and fabrication and all those kind of things. So when we start going through that process, and if the ADVANCE Act can be instituted correctly and on time, then we're going to get a product out sooner. It'll be a cheaper product. It'll mean cheaper nuclear energy. And that means that when we start deploying our micro-reactors around the place, we can compete with other energy sources in the areas we're going to be shipping to. And those will be things like predominantly diesel generators in remote locations, and then you can have consistent power on islands or remote habitation or mining projects or oil and gas sites. This is a way of getting nuclear energy all over the place to power things cheaply and safely and cleanly.
Excellent. Well, great info, James. I want to thank you for your time, and to our audience, thanks for tuning in and have a great day.